Hello, everybody. Thanks for tuning in for another episode of Crosshairs, my journey in the hair industry and beyond. I think I left off talking about me starting hair school. And you have to excuse me if I have a little bit of a lisp. I've got my new Invisalign aligners in my mouth, and probably not the best time to start a recording, but I'm going to try and see what I could, you know, see how I sound. And if it's good, then, you know, it's good. Because I've been trying to get a little bit more consistent with my podcast releases. And plus, I got a timetable. I'm trying to get current to my existing situation, which is going to be pretty cool because I'm, you know, going cross country, and I really like to share that with you guys too as I go forward. But hair school. So yeah, I mean, being an educator now, I go to a lot of hair schools. I go to a lot of salons and also vocational schools. And, you know, I try to share my experience as best as I can to be able to be helpful. This is one thing that I realized going to hair school myself is that, you know, you only get the foundation. More things you learn as you come out and you're actually working in the field. I had a little bit of an advantage because I, you know, prior to going to hair school, I had been working in barbershops. So I got my legs and my endurance for working in the barbershop in a high-paced environment. Also, I learned how to deal with personalities and the ups and downs of the flow of, you know, customers. I learned that, you know, before I went to hair school. So, you know, by the time I did, I went to Rob Roy Beauty Academy in Worcester, Mass. And, you know, due to my choices and my lifestyle, you know, I found myself in Worcester, getting out of Boston and Roxbury at the time, 1993, and, I was going down that path, you know, bad choices, young men, a lot of partying, a lot of drinking, a lot of drugs, a lot of trouble. And I came to Worcester to get a new life and a new start. And part of that start was hair school. I mean, I was running around in Worcester, you know, when I was meeting people, I was cutting hair. I was doing a lot of haircuts for free. A woman I had gotten involved with who later became my wife and my ex-wife, she, you know, was telling me that I needed to stop, you know, doing free haircuts or going by people's house to cut their hair. And, you know, they wouldn't give me money. They'd be like, oh, I got a meal. You know, you hungry? Like, you know, I was dealing with shit like that. And, you know, that's one of the stories I try to tell people too. Like, you know, don't be taken advantage of, even though you're like new. Like, you have to know your worth and know that you're given a service. And, you know, some people have to do hair in the kitchen, but you really don't want to be doing hair in the kitchen, you know, if this is going to be your career. So I went to Rob Roy Beauty Academy, and I was very excited about it. And, you know, first off, the last time I went to school for music, and, you know, I had a serious passion about that. So it really wasn't like learning. It was like more like walking through doors into a mansion that I purchased, and I couldn't wait to see what was this room looked like, and, you know, just absorbing it in. And it was really wonderful. My experience with hair school was quite different. A lot of it, the beginnings of it, has to do with like science, anatomy, bacteriology, things, a lot of memorization. I had to learn right away about filling the requirements. We had the requirements that you had to do every week to fulfilled the needs for a state board exam. And also that if you're not aware, if you're in hair school now and you're, you know, trying to figure out how this makes sense, because that also leads into the financial aid. So, you know, so many tests a week has to be done. So many requirements have to be made to satisfy requirements for state board and financial aid. It's how the schools get paid, right? And, you know, at first, you know, I was a little bit thrown off because, you know, I'm cutting hair already. I feel like I was pretty decent at it. And I'm doing these things and I'm like, how does this make sense? You know, but something inside me told me that, you know, if I was going to really do this and I was going to be serious about it, then I needed to learn these things. And that was a long time ago now, and I remember a lot of it still. Some of it really didn't make any sense, but a lot of it, you know, the science is science. So, you know, I always advocate to learn the science, learn the basics, and then, you know, you build on that with your own experience and, you know, you can never go wrong. Like, you know, a lot of things with bacteriology, the way that the scalp and skin operate, what their needs are. Like, you, if you keep that in mind, then when you're introduced to a new product or a new technique, like, you'll know if it's, you know, if it's built on true foundation or if it's just some claims that they're trying to make. That's also our responsibility. We are supposed to know these things so that when, you know, we come across these things, we know how to, you know, handle it accordingly. So, you know, that wasn't my thought process at the time, but I kind of had a feeling like, you know what, you're going to really want to know this stuff if you're going to do it. And around that same time, I remember, like, realizing that, you know, I was doing all the faded haircuts in school. Like, they had me doing all the tight fades. I'm like, they had me, like, people would ask me to help them and stuff like that. And I realized, like, I'm working for the school at this point. Like, I was, and I'm like, I didn't come here to pay to get taught to actually be an employee for the school. Now, I understand sometimes the instructors do not have the same knowledge as some of the students. And also, a lot of schools have difficulty finding instructors or junior instructors. So when they see someone with talent, they, you know, they try to harness that and, you know, use it to their benefit if they can, and also show a student another path, which is through education and being an instructor, which is nothing wrong with that. But if your goal is not to do that, then you have to know that you're learning, right? And I kind of was a prick about it, but I was like, don't give me another damn fade. Like, if I do another fade in this classroom, like, I'm going to ask for my money back. Like, and I went to the instructor, and this is what I know. And I tell you, God bless a good instructor. I had two wonderful instructors, Mrs. G and Mrs. G Aquinto. And once I said that, they said, oh, great. Cause we don't want to do that anyway. And boy, did they give, they gave me every perm, every color, every blowout, every scissor haircut, texturizing, gave me extra videos. Like, they were like, are you bored? Here's a video. And they gave me videos to watch. And I never regret it, because I then started to transcend what my comfort level was and actually started to learn. And if you're in hair school or any type of school, to be honest with you, and if you're getting bored by the content or you don't seem to be getting anything from it, like, go to your instructor and tell them that you need to be challenged, that you're not really getting what you thought you was going to get, especially if you're paying for college or paying for a program. Like, you're paying. And if you're not getting challenged and you're bored, or you don't really know that you're bored, but you know, it just seems mundane, or it just seems like you're being dragged through the information and you don't get it, go to the instructor and tell them, like, look, I need more of a challenge. And if they're a really good instructor, or a teacher or a professor, they're going to give it to you. And that's what I got. And I was never sorry. When I finished hair school, I mean, it was kind of a big deal. You know, I graduated and we had a ceremony and it was pretty cool. And, you know, I embarked into the journey of being a new hire. So I went to, I think my first barbershop with a license was at this little small barbershop called the Onyx Barbershop. It was run by Hazel. And, you know, I was the barber, but I also did styling. Like, I thank Hazel because when I came to work there, Hazel didn't just throw me in the box. Oh, you're a barber, you're only going to be cutting this, right? So I only did men's haircut. I was doing everything that I had learned in school, from setting hair, relaxers, finger waves, color. I even started dibbling and dabbling into some weaves and extensions. She showed me a little bit more with that. And it was pretty cool. It was funny though, like when you're new and you're still learning, one of the things I had to learn as an employer was maybe not to put people into those situations. Sometimes the client doesn't really appreciate that you give, you know, them to a new stylist or a new barber, right? Especially if they've been with you for a while. So I had a couple of times when some women jumped out of the chair and was like, you don't know what you're doing. And it's only because I was nervous and I couldn't get, you know, my bearings. And, you know, they was very intimidating, or I was intimidating by them. And it was just, you know, it was a learning experience. But yeah, I really thank Hazel for that. After that, I went to a place that's really popular in Worcester called Diorio's. Same situation there. I was hired as a barber, but I did everything that a barber license allowed me to do. So I did a lot of men's haircuts. I did shaves. I also did women's haircuts, blowouts, colors. I even learned some waxing. That's when I first started to do waxing or epilating. And it was really cool. That was a high-paced shop, still is. I think Diorio's is still one of the top 10 color clients from Paul Mitchell. Right now, I think there's 35 or 40 employees there. Three levels and a three-decker converted to a salon and spa. John Diorio is one of my good friends and colleagues in the industry. And, you know, I got a lot of information and experience there as well. Also learned first about business structures, because you know, the grandfather would explain, you know, how you did your business. Like, you know, he talked to you, like when you first hired, about how he's going to do business, the pay structure, what your responsibility was going to be, how what you were going to be able to do with taxes and these things. And I don't think that is talked to enough with young professionals when they come into the industry. Sometimes people are hiring them and like, oh, you're on 50% commission. And that's all the information they tell them. And then a year later, they find out that they're responsible for their taxes and they have no knowledge of it. Like, they don't know, like they haven't talked to anybody, or no one in their family has ever worked as a 1099 employee. And they get discouraged because, you know, they were either supposed to pay, you know, ahead of time, or they didn't take any consideration for savings for their taxes, or they just got a bad tax person. Okay, if you got a good accountant, your accountant will guide you towards how to do your expenses, your profit and loss, and things like that. But I'll talk about that in another episode. But yeah, so Pops, John Diorio Senior, really wearing that down on everyone, and really good environment. But I felt like I needed more, and I always was kind of looking for more of a challenge. Plus, around that time, I went through a divorce, and there was a lot going on, and I really needed to keep it moving. So from there, I went to my first, franchise experience. It was Lords and Ladies in the Mall in the Worcester Fashion Outlet Mall. It wasn't the Worcester Fashion Outlet Mall when I started there, but it turned into that. And I'm going to tell you, there's something I learned working in that mall about hustling. So, like I said, when I was at that first barbershop in Brooklyn, like, I learned about hustling as far as like pace and being able to keep up and being able to work in a timely manner. When I hear guys taking an hour and a half on a haircut nowadays, I'm just like, what? Like, that's crazy. They would hate me working next to them because I would do 3 haircuts for every one of your haircuts. For real. Okay. But when I was at Lords and Ladies, I learned a different type of hustle, because we was in this location in the mall that was great. It was right by the food court, right? And at those barbershops and the prior places I had worked in, including the Oreos, like, the clientele was so consistent and the flow was so consistent. I really didn't have to go out and hunt for people. I didn't have to go out and market myself and create a persona for people to want to come to me. But I had to at that mall, okay? Especially when they did the renovations and they turned it into this high-class outlet mall. Now, if you're working in this situation and, you know, the times are slow or you don't have any business and, you know, you're getting an hourly wage, but the manager is like, you need to do more, I'm going to tell you a secret. It's really not a secret. I mean, it's really in plain sight. It's what I did. And what I did, I created a relationship with each and every employee in store in the mall. I had clients that was coming to me from, and we're still cool to this day. I mean, John Monge, we met, he worked at the Benetton store, and we would trade discounts, and I would cut his hair, and I did a good job. That's the key. Because if I did a lousy job, then it would work the other way. Like, he would tell everybody, don't go up there to see that guy. He's terrible. But I did a great job, and he kept coming to me, and he would refer to everyone. And then he not only would refer everybody that he worked with, he referred me to clients and people who were just in the store shopping who might be looking like it. Like, he was very out there, and he would tell me, oh, this sweater looks nice, but you would look go nice with the haircut. You need a little lineup. You should go see my boy. And those are the type of people that you want to market yourself to, right? You want to create a persona and a relationship with people who are going to talk about you and brag about you and really care about what they look like, right? So I had the mall, like, I had the whole mall. When I was slow, I'd go for a walk. I'm going for a walk, and I'd go walk through the mall. And I talk to people and I get engaged with people. And that was a hustle that I picked up, and it was through a need. And I did so well there, and things was going really well. And then there was a guy who I knew. His name was Sean Bryant. And Sean was opening a black barbershop in Worcester. And he had gotten some notoriety. He had cut boys and men's hair during a concert. So he became a celebrity barber back then, before there were celebrity barbers. And he opened this shop called Mo Better Cuts. And he asked me if I was going to come and work. So I left Lords and Ladies to go work with my friend. Now, whenever we're doing business with friends, you should always make sure that it's worth your while. You should make sure that it's just as important to you as it is to them. And I'm not taking anything away from my experience with Sean and Mo Better Cuts because it was wonderful times. Like, I met some wonderful people and we did some awesome things. But I look back on the business part of it, and I think that the business part of it definitely could have been handled better. You know, it was one of those things like, yeah, I'll give you 50% commission. You can come down and, right? That was kind of the whole deal. It's always that, oh, 50% commission, blah, blah, blah. I learned that 50% commission really isn't good for the barber or the stylist, and it's definitely not good for the business itself. I'll talk about that in another podcast, but it's just the dollars don't make sense. It's basic business math, and we need to talk about it and do it more. But at the time, my friend was opening one of the best, coolest barbershops that had come across in Worcester, still to this day, and I was down. And I went there, and the squad that he had, we all did great. Like, everybody who worked there ended up going on to open their own business and do really well. It was me, Jamal, rest in peace, Jamal, Kemper. Nikki. Mike, Spanish Mike. There was two Mikes. One Mike was white and one Mike was Spanish. And who else? There's a couple more people. Anitra. Anitra was the receptionist. Man, I can't remember everybody. But there was a bunch of us. And we would go down there and we would just cut it up and the music would be playing and we would do shows. And Sean was related to some rappers, and some rappers would come through the boot camp click. Like, it was popping. Like, it was the best shop in Worcester. No, there was nothing like that in Worcester ever. And, you know, things happen. People move on. The business part really wasn't going well. The chemistry was great. Everybody loved everybody. Like, we, you know, there was no bad blood. And, you know, everybody went on to open their own business. And that's just the power of what the entrepreneurship that can happen within the hair industry if you really, you know, wanted to. Like, you know, we all went on to open our own place. Like, I left. I mean, I think we was there maybe 18 months to 2 years. Oh, yeah, we did some crazy stuff. Like, the whole crew, we all went there. Back then, a lot of people didn't have dreads. It was like couple of places we knew to go get it, but there was a place in Brooklyn, so we all went to Queens. I'm sorry, it was in Queens. We all went to Queens and we all got dreads. Then we all had dreads for years. We was all twisted up. We bum rushed that hair salon in Queens and took it over for the day, and we just all sat there and got our dreads twisted up. And then we learned how to do it, and then we came back to Worcester and we was all like twisting up people's head dreads. It was just passing it on. It was really great. But I think it was about 2 years, 18 months to 2 years, we all worked together. And then, you know, slowly we all went our different way. And I think, you know, Sean, you know, had some challenges with, you know, running a business. One of the things is overhead. Like, you can have seven awesome barbers. Everybody's kicking butt. The business is making money. Everybody's doing great. But if your business plan or the money that you're making and you're not taking care of your overhead and expenditures, it don't make no sense. You're going to end up having challenges and things just don't go right, particularly if you're not doing retail. We were dibbling and dabbling in retail. My buddy Kemper was the retail king. He was the one who really first introduced me to retail. Now, I had learned retail in Lords and Ladies, but I wasn't responsible for it. Okay? The retail was coming from management and the owner, and my job was just to talk about it and put it in people's hands. And there was a huge room of retail, and I would go through like a kid in a candy store and just try stuff, but I didn't really have no ownership. Kemper was the first one who put me onto ownership. We would go to wholesale companies, purchase goods, whether it be brushes, grease, do-rags, combs, picks, like anything hair related or beauty related, skincare, creams, cologne, watches, cufflinks, anything that was like cool that the guys would like, we'd go to the wholesalers, we'd buy it and we'd bring it back and we'd retail it. That was the first time I had ownership in it. Okay. When I left, I went back to Lords and Ladies. And I brought the knowledge and some of the clients that I had obtained and what I learned back to Lords and Ladies. And I was doing great there. They actually put me in, there was two stores. They pretty much overstretched themselves in that mall because they put two salons in the same mall. One upstairs, one downstairs. And that probably was one of the bad decisions that they made as a company because you're paying two rents. I mean, you don't need that much exposure. The mall wasn't that big and it didn't have that much foot traffic. As you could tell when I said that I would go and I'd go hunting for people. But when I came back, I had more of a clientele, more of a following. I was back in the mall. Just to add on to that, the Mo Better Cuts was about four blocks away from the mall. So the people still could find me. It wasn't like I left the area. Even though my experience has been that you can move four blocks from one location to another and people will find that inconvenient and not come. Not all. There's a certain percentage of people that will not come to you or can't find you and you've only moved four blocks away. So that's always something to take in consideration. It's just a funny thing about life. People won't find you if you move across the street, right? Especially if they get into their routines. So anyway, I'm back at the mall. They gave me my own store. All right. I wasn't in charge. I was just a stylist there. I worked there 6 days a week. When I wasn't there, nobody was there. And it was pretty cool. And what led me to open my own salon was an experience that I had with the management. And I mean, I guess I could have just swallowed it and took it and accepted what happened. But at the time, I'm stand by the fact that I don't feel like it was right. It's so funny. Recently, I saw the young man who was a major part of this point in my life. Anyway, what happened was, everything was going great. Had a great relationship with the management, the owners. I had my own store. Things was popping. The mall at the time was doing really well. At the time, I had a friend. Her name was Jen. Well, her name is Jen. She's still my friend. I just haven't seen her in quite a long time. And she was working down the hall at a store called Esprit. And Jen used to come at least every month to get her hair cut and colored. And then she had a son, or she has a son. His name is Michael. At the time, Michael was like, a good 18 months, maybe 2 years old. And she would bring him to get his hair cut like maybe every 3 weeks, right? Now, the funny thing is, she used to make an appointment, and when she would come into the salon and to make an appointment, sometimes the shop would be busy. She would put Michael down to because she'd be carrying him, and then when she put him down, he would run out the store and down the hallway in the mall, and it was like a game to him, right? Every time she walked in, she'd be kicking and screaming and making noise, and then she put him down and he'd run, and she'd be trying to book an appointment, and she'd have to run out the shop to go catch him and then come back, and then she'd just put him down because he'd be kicking, and she'd be trying to book her appointment and book his appointment. It was kind of hilarious, and she would do that every month or every 3 weeks, right? She'd come in and book the appointment, and it was just kind of funny. Now, at the same time, Jen used to give us all discounts if we came. She had worked her way up. I think she was maybe assistant manager or manager. And my manager used to go there and, you know, take advantage of the discounts that Jen was given, as well as all of us, except for me, because they really didn't have a good men's department in Esprit. That's probably why they closed. I'm just joking. But anyway, and one day, when Jen comes in, she's got Michael on a hip, and Michael is fussing and making And she's just like, I'm not up for it today. I do not feel like running after him. So he's just going to have to bitch it out and cry. So Michael was crying and put me down. And she was like, no, she's booking an appointment and she's talking. And at that moment, I don't know, my manager just had a snotty moment. That's all I call it. Maybe she was thinking about somebody who was in the room, somebody who was watching. I don't know. But she was like, if you can't quiet that baby down, you're going to have to leave the salon. And I remember I was working on somebody else's hair. And I heard her say that to my friend or my client. And I looked over and I was like, you can't do that. That's just totally wrong. You can't tell somebody they got to leave because they got a crying baby. And then the manager looked at me and she said, well, if you don't like it, you can hit the door too. You can leave too. And I was like, whoa. So, I don't know. I've always had this thing about injustice more to other people than myself. Sometimes I can be tolerant of behavior, but you know, when I have clients or people who I've built relationships with and they've gone through injustice, you know, I seem to be a little bit more intolerable of that. Now, in my older age, I don't care if you're putting yourself in a situation and you don't speak up for yourself. I kind of have something to say to you, like, you know, won't you speak up for yourself? But long story short, I decided to leave too. There was something about that that I didn't really appreciate. And I really felt as though the integrity of the business was, you know, wasn't there. I mean, this was a woman who was coming every 4 weeks. She was a regular client. We had a lot of transient people that would come to the mall that weren't, you know, they weren't regulars. They just came because they were in town or they came to that mall for shopping and then they would come in and get their hair done. So they weren't like regulars. The people who worked in the mall, the people who were like coming all the time, who we interacted with all the time, those were our regular clients. And I kind of felt as though that she spit in the face of our regular client, our regular clientele. And that's something that I didn't really want to deal with. And so when she gave me the option to leave, I took it. And I really wasn't thinking. And it really wasn't an idea of mine. I didn't have a dream of, you know, one day I'm going to open my own business. It was out of a need. Out of a need and a desire not to have to be dealing with that type of environment, I went down the street. Again, about 2 blocks away from the mall. And there was a little small location. I inquired about the rent. And that was my first place. Corey Jamal Hair Studio. My middle name is Jamal. And that was my first business. That was the beginning of me into real entrepreneurship. And I did do a business plan and I did seek out some advice. But, you know, I'll talk about that in the next episode. Yeah? If you got any questions or comments, please feel free to shoot me a message on Instagram, Facebook, or email, whatever you feel like. If you have any questions about my experience or any comments that you want to have or anything you want me to talk about or give any insight to, please give a shout out. Until next time, peace.